This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. This week's episode is brought to you by the Friends of the Magic Word. Those are the ones who, with their financial support, help keep this podcast going week after week. We want to welcome this week Mr. Tom Becker and also Bob Lilly. Thank you both very much for your support. It was interesting, by the way, Bob, getting a chance to meet you when I was at the recent Winter Carnival of Magic and having a chance to sit down and enjoy breakfast with you. And I look forward to seeing all of the Friends of the Magic Word as I travel throughout the world going to different magic conventions. So if you happen to see me, please step up and say hello. You don't have to be a friend to come over and say hello. I'd like to chat with you. And perhaps maybe you might even want to become a Friend of the Magic Word. But again, I want to welcome and thank those people who have step forward and pledge their support. And thank you guys very much for your help in keeping this podcast going week after week. Well, this week, we actually, speaking of the Winter Carnival of Magic, we got an opportunity to sit down and talk with not one, not two, but three different people. And those next two will be coming up over the next couple of weeks. And this week, we're going to be starting off with the first person who actually was the first lecturer out of the chute for the Winter Carnival of Magic. And that was Tiffany Allen, who her maiden name was Allen, and she had married Boris Wilde, and she goes by the stage name of Savage, and she's going to explain where that name came from at the first part of this podcast. I don't want to give that away, but she also talks about a variety of things, which I think will be of interest to everybody at some level. She talks quite a bit about working princes parties, so those of you young ladies or women who are doing these kinds of parties or thinking about wanting to get out and doing some birthday parties that are a little bit different rather than just doing magic, but actually with a theme of princes. She talks about that. We also talk about how she was the first woman to join the Slight Club that Scott Robinson and his group of people out in North Carolina had formed. And so she does a lot of great close-ups. She's also very involved with seances and the bizarre type of magic. And of course, she is most recently been infatuated with the Georgia Wonder or the Georgia Magnet. And she does an act and a lecture on that. And she's teaching that. So she hopes that others perhaps might follow her lead and want to do some more research about that. Those people, I guess there are at least three different ladies who have done that, and share that with her and perhaps carry on and do your own act using these types of techniques that the Georgia Magnet had used. So we go into all that. That's why I'm going to summarize that up front so you kind of get an idea of what it is you're going to be hearing in this week's episode. I'm glad we had an opportunity really to sit down and to chat at length about all of these subjects. And I think you will find this particular episode to be of great interest. So please welcome my guest this week, Ms. Tiffany Savage, here on The Magic Word. I love it when I have the opportunity to talk with someone who has the whole package. That is a performer and is interested in history and in growth, in their development, and a world traveler, and and close-up, and stage, and in parlor. And this lady does it all. And it's absolutely amazing and does it all in high heels. she was the first woman who was a member of the Slight Club with Scott Robinson's group out in North Carolina. She has been performing magic close-up for a long number of years, and recently, or I should say over the last few years, so it's recent, has found a new interest in a couple of things. One is in the Georgia Magnet or the Georgia Wonder, in which she performs and presents a presentation as that person, embodying that person basically, and has a wonderful lecture and talking about the history of that. And then the other
other thing is that she fell in love with and married Boris Weil and moved to France. So their gain is our loss. But she still comes back over to the U.S. from time to time. And she's just a wonderful young lady that I always enjoy our opportunities when we get a chance to see each other. And if you have not heard her before or seen her act or have seen her perform any place, you need to go out and find her because she's amazing. Or look for some of the videos. Please welcome my guest today, Tiffany Allen or Tiffany Sauvage, Tiffany Wild.
Tiffany, whatever my last name is. I'll answer to any of them.
So where does Sauvage come from? Was that your mother's maiden name or something?
No, that is a French last name.
Okay.
It is French for wild. I'll let you make the connections from there.
Oh, okay.
Because
kind of like savage, I guess. Sauvage.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
I realize, and that's what I say. I'm like, oh, it's, you know, savage with a U. And then I had somebody say, oh, it's no, it's sausage with a V. And I'm like, oh, no.
No, I don't think so.
Absolutely not. That is not what I wanted.
It sounds very international. I like it. Kind of poetic, actually.
Yeah, and it went well with my act, too. You know, being a little esoteric, a little bit different. And, you know, I'm still Tiffany Allen, but Tiffany Sauvage just really struck a note with me.
So when you married, you didn't take Wild as a last name, or you didn't hyphenate the Wild?
Wild is Allen not Wild. His actual last name.
Well, I guess. I'm sorry.
No, you're good. It actually took me, we were dating for 4 months before I found out.
Okay.
And I still hold that over his head.
So you were keeping something from me.
I didn't know your last name.
Yes. Well, and that's another thing. As far as you had met him at a Trix convention, I guess, then.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So tell me something about that.
Oh, God. It was. So I am not the romantic. I do.
You're not a romantic.
I'm not. No. Boris is the romantic in the relationship.
I could tell. Yeah. This kiss act and everything else he does. Sure. Very romantic gentleman.
Right. I was going to say, if you just look at our magic, you know, he has the kiss act, the butterfly act. It's all like.
It's all beautiful stuff.
Gorgeous stuff. And mine is ghost stories, essentially, or history stories, weird history, like just this weird stuff, a little bit dark and creepy. So, you know, it was like a golden.
You were a goth girl kind of growing up.
I wanted to be. Inside, I was.
Okay.
Inside, I was.
An internal goth girl.
Internal goth, but no, I dressed very preppy. But yeah, we met at the Trix convention. He was one of our headliners. And it was a rom-com. I had to leave the final night where he was on the show. He did the first and the second half of Trix, which we typically don't do. But he did the first half. He did the kiss act. Second half, he did the butterfly act. And we had talked like the day before, like on Friday. And he was like, you know, the adorable French accent. He was like, oh, are you coming to the show? And I'm like, I am going to miss the first half because I have to go do a show as my kid's character, Princess Tiff. I was living in Charlotte at the time, so I wasn't staying at the hotel, but the kid's show was a 5-minute drive from the hotel, and I lived about like 20, 25 minutes away. So I changed at the hotel into this massive pink princess dress. It's my old prom dress. I somehow still fit in it. I'm, you know, just a blessing there. So I went and did the kid's show, but I told him I would be back for the second half. So I get back and I changed in one of my friend's rooms. And by the time I get back to the hotel, like the show is still going on. I was like, okay, instead of going back to their room and changing, I'll just change my car real quick. Like, you know, we've all had to do that before. Yep. No big deal. So I go to change in my car and I'm going to wear the same shoes. I'm literally just putting on like a pair of pants and a top. Like it's not hard. And I go to put my pants on, they're leggings, and I kept my shoes on. And when I went to go put it on, I ripped my pants. And I was like, oh no.
As you were pulling them up?
I was pulling them up. Yeah, ripped it. So I was like, okay, I can either go back to my apartment, change, and come back and spend like, you know, 40 minutes to an hour doing that. Or like, everybody's already seen me in this princess dress.
We're the princess, yeah.
I'm just going to rock it. So I put the tiara back on. I go into the lobby of Trix, of course, go right up to the bar, ordered Cosmo, because if I'm going to wear pink, I'm going to be drinking something pink. So I'm stuck in the dress. And right as I have the Cosmo in my hand, the doors open. Boris comes out, like, leading everybody for intermission. And he sees me. He goes, "Oh, my princess." And I'm like, "Ah, damn it. Damn it." And we ended up staying in the lobby until, like, 4 a.m. that night, just talking. I'm still in the princess dress the entire time.
Yeah.
And, like, this thing is huge. It's got its own gravitational pull. And we've talked every day since then. And it was just
amazing.
It was very much a rom-com moment. And I'm like, "Oh, man, I'm in a rom-com." And he's like, "I'm in a rom-com."
Well, what was that like as far as a long-distance relationship with him in France? And then when you were, when you talked every day, I guess you just, you could either Zoom or Skype FaceTime or...
Yeah, Facebook Messenger has been fantastic. Mm-hmm. But it was hard during COVID because we weren't engaged. We weren't married.
Oh, so for 2 years.
2 years we didn't see each other.
Wow.
Yeah. And then the next
one. But you maintained that.
We did.
That loving relationship, basically, and it developed more.
Mm-hmm.
That's a great rom-com story.
Isn't it? Like I said, I'm in the middle of a rom-com. Yeah, it's like Wednesday Addams in the middle of a rom-com.
Wednesday Addams. It's hilarious. So many different directions I want to go with that. I do want to ask you just, I want to go talk about the seances and stuff in just a second, but what about the princes parties? Because I had talked with Katrina Crutch, and I know that she made like a living basically doing that, and and she was sent out by different agents because I guess they book different kinds of princes. Tell me something. I don't know anything really about the market.
So what I do is different. I believe what she did, and I don't know her, but what it sounds like is she did princess parties. So with that, you get booked out as like Belle or Ariel or that kind of thing.
Right.
I don't do that. Quite honestly, it's because I actually tried to twice. I don't have the body type for it. I'm too curvy.
Okay.
They don't want to send me out there. And I'm okay with that. The princess party I do is a magic show. But I am Princess Tiff.
Yeah.
That's me. I have my own princess. And it started off as an accident about 10 years ago now, I guess. Maybe a little bit more. I got a request to do a kid's birthday party. The mom was like, "Oh, do you have a costume or anything?" And it was just for a magic show. It wasn't for princess or anything. She just wanted a magic show for her six-year-old daughter's birthday. And she's like, "Well, do you have a costume or anything?" I was like, "What do you mean? Like a top hat and cape?" Like, no, I show up in like jeans and a blazer. And like, you know, at the time I was like the cool, you know, magician or whatever. And
you were 20s that time?
Yeah, in my 20s. Yeah, mid 20s, 24, because I'm 34 now. 35 in 2 weeks.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. And I literally looked in my closet and I always keep any of like the dresses that I have. And I had a ton of them. And I looked, I saw this huge pink monstrosity. And of course, I had tiaras. And I go, "You want a princess?" And Princess Tiff was born. And I didn't want to have to worry about like royalties or anything like that. I wanted a princess that I could control because I love the whole princess vibe. Like I have a season pass at Disneyland Paris. I'm like huge into the princess. I love it. But it does fall short in some areas as far as I'm concerned. And I didn't realize it until I started doing it. So, you know, I'm going out doing the princess parties and my act slowly evolved to include like all this pink and sparkly stuff. And like these little girls were becoming interested in magic and I was showing them it's for you, too.
Yeah.
And then I used to wear contacts because, we don't really, you know, no, I don't think of any princesses with glasses. One day my contacts ripped. So I wore my glasses. It just so happened the show that I was doing was for a little girl with glasses.
Oh.
And she was so excited.
Because she sees someone like me.
She saw a princess with glasses. And ever since then, Princess Tiff has always worn glasses.
That is an amazing story there.
Yep. So I wear glasses, a massive pink dress, and sparkly pink shoes. Sparkly pink tennis shoes. Because I don't like having to put everything into a box. And I just, magic is for everybody. I do shows for little boys too. There are little boys that love Princess Tiff. They want to wear sparkly dresses and stuff too. And it makes me so happy when the parents do that. So yeah, Princess Tiff is she is the kid's princess. And when I try to describe her, I'm like, what if a 5-year-old had to come up with a princess? And that's who Princess Tiff is.
So what kind of tricks do you do? I assume that they are related to like frog and princes and like little treasure boxes and
they're not. They
fairy
are,
dust or
I perform out of a toy box. Okay. I got a big pink toy box.
Uh-huh. Like a chest?
Yeah,
kind of
yeah.
A thing? Okay.
But it's light.
Okay.
And I do some basic magic. I have a coloring book. I'm working on my own coloring book to fill in some gaps there. And it's going to be like a princess coloring book. I'm going to have Princess Tiff in there and a couple other things.
You're going to have your own coloring book?
Yes. Yeah. But I'm an artist, so I'm hand drawing everything. Mm-hmm. And when you're doing the art, it's never good enough.
Right.
So it's been in production for a while. But, you know, I do a coloring book. And I love telling people this, in my kids show, I do a haunted key. Mm-hmm. I do a 10-card poker deal. And I do a roulette routine.
And what?
A roulette.
Oh, roulette. Okay.
Like Russian roulette routine.
Mm-hmm. Oh. For kids?
For kids.
Okay, so you got like egg smashing or something. It's not going to be too dangerous, I'm assuming.
No, it's not too dangerous. I made some mistakes when I first started it, where I did use like dangerous looking objects. Mm-hmm. But I use cupcakes now.
Hmm.
And the kids lose their minds when they think you're going to smash a cupcake.
Okay.
It is more intense than if I had a knife under there.
Now, that is funny.
It's great.
Uh-huh.
Because, I mean, if you think about it, and I wrote about this in my PDF for pins, my hat pin roulette routine.
Mm-hmm.
But I talk in there, it's the same method that I use for kids.
You said that was like 1,000% foolproof.
Yeah, it's idiot-proof.
Idiot-proof, yeah.
It is idiot-proof. If you are looking at the bags, you cannot mess this up.
Mm-hmm.
And I stand behind that. Boris hates it when I do this trick. He loves it, but he hates it.
Okay.
But I use the same method with the kids. And there's a dice involved and like numbers. The kids love it. But when you show them, there's a cupcake underneath there. They're, not the cupcake! They lose it. But if you think about it, when kids feel uncomfortable, they're going to get quiet and not react.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to cry and run to mommy, or you know, they're going to run to their parents,
yeah.
Just completely check out. That's not what you want in a kid's show. You want them reacting. What's going to make them react?
Yeah.
Something that's just a little bit naughty.
Okay.
Like, you know, if you spill something, if you make a mess, what's going to make a mess? Eggs.
Milk. Yeah.
Milk, cupcake, because a cupcake, you know what they want? Cupcakes. And I have to close with the cupcake trick, because as soon as they see it, what do they want? Cupcakes.
They want the cupcakes.
They want the cupcakes. So it's a great closer trick. So
so that would lead right to the cake and ice cream for the parties.
Exactly.
Too. Okay.
Exactly. And, but now I'm very conscientious about allergies and that kind of thing. So
it's like gluten-free and all that kind of
mm-hmm,
stuff.
And peanuts and that kind
peanuts,
of thing.
Wow.
So, but I worked a bakery, so I make my own fake cupcakes. You use plaster for the base and then spackle you can actually use in a cake tip and pipe that out like it's regular icing.
Mm-hmm.
So I do that. I find out the birthday kid's favorite color. And then at the end, the birthday kid gets the giveaway. They get to keep one of the cupcakes.
Hmm.
And then that leads right into cake and ice cream. And the 10-card poker deal that I do, it's Boris and Paul Gordon's 10 Max. And they talk about a couple different variations. But for this, I have 5 cards that have cupcake ingredients, 5 cards that have, you know, gross ingredients that are going to make kids laugh, like toilet paper, cockroach, toothpaste.
Or worms or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we do the 10-card poker deal. It's like, okay, well, whatever cards you have are what we're going to use to make, you know, a cupcake. So, you know, they get to choose the cards. They end up with all the cupcake cards. Then we put it into a chick pan, like a little one.
Right.
Cover it. Boom. There's a magic cupcake and their favorite color. Oh, you know what? I have another trick we could do with this.
Right.
Put that under the bag. We lead into it. No, don't crush the cupcake. And then the kicker for my routine pinned is that you have 6 bags. Only one of them is safe. All the other ones have cupcakes or hat pins or what have you underneath them.
Beautiful. Again, I think like what Katrina was doing, it was something in which they would be, as you said, something would be like a Disney character, which mm-hmm. then the agent has to pay a royalty or whatever.
Right.
Whereas that's the beautiful thing about this. This is
it's
Princess
me.
Tiff. It's you. Right. You're not paying anybody but yourself for the thing like this. If you develop a character like that,
mm-hmm.
you find though sometimes whenever that a parent would call that they say, we'd like to have Ariel or we want to have whomever, you know, Cinderella. I mean, they say, well, I don't have that, but I got Tiffany or whatever.
Yeah. I've never had that because
okay.
I market it as a magic show.
I see.
It's Princess Tiff magic.
I gotcha.
Yeah. And okay. I started a Patreon where I'm trying to do more than just magic. So the Patreon, I've released there some crafts on there with the kids. And what I would like to do is build it up where, because I used to teach art at the Magic Canvas, and okay. I loved teaching kids how to paint. Uh-huh. So I want Princess Tiff to teach kids how to paint, but also I live in France. I'm 30 minutes away from the Louvre and the Musée d'Orsay. Why can't Princess Tiff go in there and teach kids about classic art?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I would love to develop. Is going into that. So Princess Tiff isn't just in this pigeonhole of being a magician, which I love doing. But if you're doing that, you're only, you know, interacting with the kids, or like you're only there for like a show. I want to be able to be more of a resource for like homeschoolers or that kind of thing, where like you're trying to do more interaction.
Right.
And, you know, just teach them, you know, these are art things, or teach some magic tricks and just that kind of thing. I feel like there's so much more I could do with this character.
So with Patreon, you then have, or people who would be your patrons, they would have access to some of these videos, I'm assuming. It wouldn't be live things, but there are things that are files that they can download and watch or whatever and learn from that.
Yes. And right now it's all free. I'm doing it now just to build up an audience, and I have like downloads, and some videos, that kind of thing. I did like with the holidays and everything, and then getting ready for this convention, I haven't been filming as much, but I'm starting it back up in March. And what I would like to do is do at least 2 videos a month, because I also do a story time. I think literature.
Like at the library or?
Yeah. Okay. I've done it at the library, but I just do a video where I'm reading a story to the kids.
Oh.
I competed in, actually there is a storytelling competition that I was in.
Not surprised. Never heard of it, but I'm not surprised. There's competition
right
for everything.
So I have like the different voices, and I like it because if we get to a word that I think is a little complicated, I can talk the kids through it. So it's not just straight up reading it. I'm trying to make these come alive. I truly believe that reading is super, super important for the kids.
Absolutely.
So if they're seeing, you know, this princess with the, and Princess Tiff has a different voice, and it's just a whole different persona. And I talk about it in the third person because it is like she's another person. But I want to be an educational resource for these kids in things that some people may not see as important, like the arts and, you know, reading obviously is important, but I want kids to love reading. And I feel like making the stories come alive instead of making reading like, oh, you have to do 10 pages or whatever. I feel like that can really help there.
So you do this in English or in French?
I do it in English right now. I have done a French show for the kids. I called it my Franglish show. And so what I did was a hybrid of French and English, and the magic words were the words in English. So when we did the coloring book, their favorite colors, if we said them in English, they appeared in the book.
Okay.
And I'm working to develop that, but right now everything's in English.
Yeah. I was just thinking, because you are so close to some of the best art galleries in the world, have you gone over there with your camera then and recorded something, or do they allow you to?
Yeah, they do. They allow you to record stuff and everything. Like, obviously, you can't touch stuff. I think there's some places where obviously you can't use flash.
Sure.
But yeah, they allow you to record.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you can go over there and kind of do a walkthrough or whatever and teach them about art then as well.
Exactly.
Or maybe do a reading in the room that's near the Mona Lisa or you know, David or something. It's kind of in the background. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah. And what I would love to do, this is next on my list because I have like pages and pages of ideas. But what I would love to do is do a reading of Madeline, which was one of my favorite books as a kid.
Yeah.
Right. Adorable. But in it, the illustrations are of actual places in Paris. And at the back of the book, they tell you where they are. So I want to do a reading of it. And then in the following videos, go to each of those places that are illustrated in the book. And then teach the kids, hey, this is what the Arc de Triomphe is. This is what the Eiffel Tower is.
Right.
And kind of give them that introduction. Like, I'm over here. Or, I mean, you know, I'm in the States right now. But I'm over in France. And if I can help people, you know, not just kids, but like people that may not ever leave the States, because and we talk about this a lot in Europe, the States, they're huge compared to Europe. Like, you can, you know, drive 3 hours, meet a completely different country in Europe, or 2 hours. So a lot of times people won't leave the States, but if I can give them that instead of like a YouTube video or whatever, where it's kind of impersonal, but if I can do it like, hey, I'm here, like, let's take a look, and I can kind of bring that to their living room, I really like that idea.
Wow. there are some good opportunities there, it sounds like.
And for sure.
And you got a lot of things kind of cooking that are going to be coming into fruition. It'd be interesting 10 years from now to go back and listen to this and see,
oh my God,
you know, where you were saying, oh yeah, you know, I've gone so much further than that, you know, or I had, you know, that was the beginning of my ideas, or where, you know, I don't know where this is going to take. It's amazing.
I know. Or, you know, I'll find something else. It's like, oh wait, no, that was a good idea. Maybe I should revisit that.
Well, that's true too. So do you still do a lot of princess parties? Or, I mean, is that part of like a major thing, or still just on the side? Or
no, it's just on the side. I've only done a couple over in France. Okay. I've done one in French, one in English, because there's a big English-speaking population, right, there. Mm-hmm. But I do mainly princess parties in the States whenever I'm here. Mm-hmm. There's a local library that I've done a show at back in my hometown. And I'm going to be back in the States for almost 2 months towards the end of this year. Mm-hmm. So I'm hoping to do more with them, because it's just a lovely, wonderful library. And I'm like, if I can bring more people in, great. But now it's funny because I'm at an age where my friends are bringing their kids.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh my God, like we went to high school, we were in high school like yesterday, you know, but we're about to have like our 10-year reunion, I think.
I would think at some point, I know there is some point at which you're going to say, I think I'm going to give up the princess thing. I'm no longer, I'm more of a queen.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
No, I've talked about this.
Okay.
One of my friends, I forget who it was, but I've talked about this with a couple people. I'm like, I can't be Princess Tiff forever. Mm-hmm. Like, no, you're going to have to be Queen Tiff at some point.
That's right.
I'm like, Queen Tiff? You're going to have a coronation and everything. Yeah. I'm like, I can do that. But I'm going to hang on to Princess Tiff as long as I can. If I need to eventually pass on the tiara, I would love to.
Well, it's just that children, I think, want to, you know, girls want to grow up and be a princess, and their mom and dad called them princes in all their lives. And that's why when they get married, that's kind of their coronation.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. It's like, oh, you're a queen now. But yeah, I just, I stayed a princess.
Right. It's fascinating. Now, you were, when you joined the Slide Club to begin with, you were doing close-up and everything, or were you doing more of the seance kinds of spooky stuff? Or
I was doing a lot of random things that didn't amount to anything. So I was completely self-taught.
You weren't sure which direction you wanted to go?
I didn't know which direction I was going to go.
No mentor or?
No, I didn't have a mentor or anything until I was close to like 25, 24. Somewhere around there, mid-20s. And I started magic when I was 8. Just because where I grew up, I didn't have that magic support system. Mm-hmm. I went to Slight Club. I did the worst card trick I absolutely could have done. I flashed so much. But because I asked them one time, I was like, why did you let me in? Like, you should know, like years later, I'm like, why did you let me in? And they told me, because you vote. So you get invited to Slight Club. Then you perform, and then you get feedback the Slight Club way, and then they vote on whether they want you in or not. And they voted not based on what I did, but my potential and how I took feedback. I wasn't defensive, and I did. I took their feedback to heart. Now, that is not always true now. If I get feedback and I don't agree with it, I will be defensive. But that also is, but not defensive in like a combative way, just feeling, no, this is why I did it this way instead of that. But it's great because Slight Club just, it makes you look at things a different way. And if you are defending something, it's going to make you look at why you're defending it. But I did the worst possible card trick. They were gracious and, again, let me in based on my potential, which I'm so glad they saw. I wouldn't be here now without it. I wouldn't have been a part of Trix. I wouldn't have met Boris. I'm actually back here at Winter Carnival because I guess 7 or 8 years ago, I competed in the close-up contest. And that was like a big push for me. I was like, I want to compete. And
this was your first competition?
First competition. I came in second.
Wow.
Eric Tate came in first, so I'm okay with coming in second. I'm more than okay with coming in second. Yeah. But I was bringing this this act into Slight Club every week for 6 months, every Tuesday. Brought it in, worked it, and it was because of their patience and their belief in me that I got there. And then after I saw I could do that, I was like, okay, well, I've been working on this other thing. And I started bringing in the Georgia Wonder. And I know to this day, they are so sick of the Georgia Wonder because it was a group of guys. So I'm like, okay, try and pick me up. Try and do this. Try and do that. So I know they're sick of it, but they're wonderful. And they're so supportive.
How many people are there in the Slight Club then?
It varies.
I know it's also a Zoom thing. So if you include people outside them, yeah. I'm just thinking
locally. We have like satellite members. But yeah. On average, we usually, and I haven't been to an in-person meeting in a while because, you know, France. But on average, we usually have about like 10 people mm-hmm. coming regularly. And, you know, that switches in and out. I was there every week. I actually moved to Charlotte so I could go to Slide Club because really? I lived in Myrtle Beach and I would drive 3.5 hours each way every Tuesday.
Just to be there.
Just to go to Slide
Club. Meant that much to you.
Yep.
Have there been other women who have followed you and joined since?
No. Not that I'm aware of.
So it's been you and still you.
It's me. It's just me. I would love for there to be another one.
Did you always feel as if that you were just one of the guys? I mean, everyone's treated you just...
Kind of. Oh, actually, I do take that back. Lauren Cohen.
Lauren.
Yeah,
of course.
No, Lauren. Yeah. She's one of our satellite members. We're both satellite members now.
Yeah. But did you feel, again, like an acceptance that I am, it doesn't matter as far as my sex goes? I mean, I'm a magician and they're accepting me as a magician.
Yeah. Actually, I have a funny story on that. They definitely do not look at me as a woman because Boris and I, when we first started dating, we didn't tell anybody. And then he came into Charlotte one day, like to see me. He had a filming out in LA. And then he was like, oh, if I stop in Charlotte, I can do like a 2-day layover and come see you. And it was like the first time we've seen each other, like since we started talking. Mm-hmm. And so he came in, he landed
on COVID.
Pre-COVID. Yeah,
okay,
pre-COVID. Yeah, yeah. So it was like a couple months after we met. And he flew in on a Tuesday. I was like, okay, cool. I'm going to skip Slide Club. Then that day, because an email goes out and we respond to the email for coming or not. I was like, I'm out this week. I get a call. It's like, Tiff, you need to come to Slide Club. It's going to be somebody's last time for a while. Like, they, you know, have to go on like an assignment or something. And I was like, damn it. Okay. And I was like, can I bring Boris Wilde?
Can I bring a friend?
Yeah. No, I had to tell him who it was.
Yeah.
And I was like, can I bring Boris Wilde? And they go, yeah. Why? And I'm like, we're kind of dating. He's like, yeah. And I was like, you do not tell anybody. I want them to like see it. So I pick up Boris. I was like, we're going to Slide Club. Mm-hmm. And we went directly from the airport to Slide Club. We walk in and the guys are all like, oh, Boris, what are you doing here? Do you have a show? Blah, blah, blah. And he goes, no, I'm here to see Tiff. Puts his arm around my shoulders. And I could see all of their minds, just like the wheels stopped turning. And they're like, Tiffany, woman, what? Because like they hadn't looked at me that way. And it was so refreshing. Uh-huh. But it was also interesting. There was a learning curve. We had gone to not tricks, but a couple of conventions together. You know, we would all be together. And there were a couple guys there that they're like, oh, is magic really like as sexist as you say it is? Hmm. And a couple of times they went with me to like a dealer's booth or something. And I would ask the question about, you know, oh, hey, what does this do? What is that? And whoever was behind the booth would demo to the man that I was with.
Like you're the assistant.
Right. And I'm like, I asked the question.
Yeah. Wow.
Now, I haven't had that happen in years now. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it's because like, you know, Boris posts about me all the time and people know that or what. But I'm hoping it's because magic is slowly progressing.
Well, there's a convention coming up, and by the time that this posts, I think it will have passed.
Yeah.
It's the Mystifier. Are you involved with that at all?
I wish I were, but I was actually going to try to, because I have a big girl job in France now, so I was going to try to take 2 weeks off so I could do Winter Carnival and Mystify, but I have my sister and my best friend getting married at the end of the year, so all my time off is going to that. I was barely able to make this, but I wish desperately I could go because it looks amazing.
Pretty
the lineup
amazing.
Is insane.
Yep.
Leah just looks, I've never met her. I would love to. She just seems wonderful and so smart.
I spoke with her on a podcast and she was the most effervescent, bubbly person I've ever spoken to.
She's just this ray of sunshine she just seems so smart and just a trailblazer and just wonderful. I will fangirl so hard when I meet her. Like it's just happening. Leah, if you're listening, I'm sorry in advance.
Yeah, I know that's going to be just an amazing convention.
Yeah.
Although it's focused on women in magic, basically. Mm-hmm. And
LGBTQIA. Or I did hear, I forget which TV show I was listening to, and I love this. Instead of LGBTQIA, they called it Legibitiqua.
Legibitiqua.
Legibitiqua. And I'm like, I love it. It sounds French.
Yeah.
I'm in.
Yeah.
I love it. And I'm part of the Lgbtquad community, so I feel like I can say it. And I'm French, so it works twice.
works twice as well. Yeah, but it's just, it's all-inclusive kind of a thing.
It just sounds
like a great convention.
Yeah, and the social media posts are fantastic. And I love their, like, the little insider jokes. Like, it was like, what do I wear? And they had, like, the Caribbean around there. I'm like, oh, my God, they get it. I love it so, so much. I am heartbroken that I can't go. Mm-hmm. I hope they do another year. I know, I heard thing. I can't remember if I read it, but like, hopefully it'll be an ongoing thing. Mm-hmm. If it happens again next year, I will be there. I will quit my job if that's what it takes.
I'm sure that so many people will attend and like it, and they're going to say, we got to do this again.
But it's not
one of those things that's kind of like, I think this convention, where as we're speaking, this is the 50th and final of the Winter Carnival, and people are coming out of the walls for this. This, I think, is the largest attendance of any convention, any Winter Carnival they've had in their 50 years, with pushing 500 people, I think, by the time this is all said.
500?
Yeah. They have over 400 already registrations, and they've got more walk-ins that are coming in and every day, today and the next few days. So no wonder
my election notes sold out.
Did they? Well, congratulations
they did.
On that.
I kept two copies back because I had everything shipped here, and I wanted a copy, and Boris wanted a copy.
Yeah.
He goes, do you think you can get it signed?
Yeah, I know somebody. I think I can help you on that.
I know a guy. Don't worry.
Yeah. They have PDFs available too, right?
Yes. Oh, yeah, yeah. There's PDFs. Because I know not everybody wants to carry a book around. And
correct.
If I sold out, it was a marketing thing, too. I was like, if I sold out, I wanted to be able to give people a PDF.
An alternative that they can, something they could still take home. You can't sign that necessarily, but...
Nah.
Yeah.
But
I like the idea of the stickers. That's kind of cool.
So I am so proud of those.
Those are cute little ideas.
I love puns.
Yeah.
And I had the idea, anybody who's listening, so Georgia Wonder is a... if you don't know it, just go look it up. But
we're going to talk about that.
We're getting to that. But so the stickers are the Georgia Wonder Moving Company. Mm-hmm. And it says a movable object specialist. And I made it and I did the designs. So those are all me. I'm an artist and I'm a little bit of a control freak. So I wanted to design
a little CD
the sticker.
Maybe? A little bit.
So I have that one. And very 1950s kind of Rosie the Riveter vibe. And it was an ongoing joke because my mom's a realtor. So every now and then, like, she helps people move. She was an interior designer. So my sister and I would help her move stuff. And that's also why I gravitated towards the Georgia Wonder, because she raised us as a single mom.
She's a beautiful woman. I met her.
Isn't she stunning?
Yeah, she is. And I was thinking, I wonder if she's single, but she's not.
Every time she comes to a magic convention, at least three people fall in love with her.
How could you not?
Yeah. She's phenomenal.
Yeah.
My biggest fan.
Great lady.
Oh, she's great. And if you ask her to describe me, she'll say she's a magician. She's a little reserved, kind of quiet, like compared to her and my sister. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mom would get us to move stuff because she brought us up with this belief, we can do anything. Mm-hmm. So I was like, oh, and when I started doing the Georgia Wonder, I was like, oh, we're the Georgia Wonder Moving Company. Like, we can do anything.
Yeah.
So I made a sticker and I sent it to her and my sister, and they're like, oh, we need those. I'm like, of course you're getting those. And the other one is the Wonder Weightlifting Gym. Mm-hmm. So they're just like little inside jokes. They're puns. And I just thought they were so fun.
I like stickers because I have, as you can see on my laptop, I've got all kinds of stickers.
I do that to mine too. I have the Tannins one too.
Yeah. I'll have to give you one of the Magic Word stickers to stick on there then too. Those are good marketing things to do. Going to the Georgia Magnet, the lecture that you talk about, that's something that you have done a lot of research and you're continuing to do that. I thought that was interesting when you found a picture that someone said, hey, I got something that you might be interested in seeing, and you were showing that for the first time here today then too. Getting way ahead of myself. But there was the Georgia Magnet, and there were three different women who were known as the Georgia Wonder / Magnet.
Yeah. And they performed primarily as, there was like the Little Georgia Magnet, which was Annie Abbott.
Little, because she was 98 pounds.
Yeah, that one was Maddie Lee Price, 98 pounds. Yeah, I know. They were all tiny.
Okay.
So it was Maddie Lee Price, Lulu Hurst, and Annie Abbott were the three big ones. So well-known.
And they only went in the U.S., or did they tour overseas?
No, they toured overseas. Okay. Lulu was the only one that performed only in the U.S. The other two performed overseas and primarily did it over there.
There being throughout Europe and or England, or?
Mm-hmm, yep, Europe and England.
Okay.
Yeah, and Maddie Lee Price is actually buried there, and I got to go to her supposed gravesite in January. And it was, I always get emotional when I go to their gravesite. It's like whenever I'm, when I lived in the States, I would try to go see, I say it like they're my friends, I kind of feel like they are. I would go see Annie and Lulu at least once a year. I would drive down to Georgia, just go say hi.
Yeah.
Because it's the Georgia Wonder changed my life. It really and truly did. And I feel like I owe it to these women. And like I talk about in the lecture, the women that did this are even more important than the act because they were such pioneers for their day. They did not care what society said. They did what they wanted.
You said that one was married like four times?
Mattie Lee Price, she was married like four times. Lulu married her stage manager.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Annie remarried too, but Annie was like...
Kind of like you did Boris.
Yeah. Married my stage manager.
Yeah.
With an age gap and everything.
Yeah, when somebody laughed, you said,
Scott,
I know why
Janet,
you're laughing.
And Scott and Janet laughed at it.
Okay.
Yeah, when Boris, before he proposed, he called two people. He called my mom to ask for permission, and he called Scott and Janet to ask for permission. And
funny.
I think Scott and Janet told him no until he said, I'll make sure she's at Trix. And they said, oh, okay, that's fine. I wish I were kidding.
Yeah.
So when I said, oh, in an age gap, scandalous, they were the ones that were laughing.
So, yes, they were pretty avant-garde for their age. But the amazing thing to me, it just hit me like a ton of bricks when you said one of them made like $1 million, which would be like $48 million
yep.
today. In her lifetime or in a year or what?
1 year.
In 1 year.
Lulu Hearst.
I mean, that's like Houdini money.
She was outselling Houdini.
No way.
Yeah. Oh, no. He hated her.
Oh.
Hated her with a burning passion.
Were there letters back and forth? Or how do you know that for a fact?
He wrote about it mm-hmm. in Miracle Mongers and Their Methods. He mm-hmm. did not like them. And I believe there are letters. There's something. I read something. The thing is, I've done so much research. I can't remember where I read things.
Yes.
But I have extensive Excel sheets where I'm like, this is where that came from. So I can kind of look it up if I ever need to, because mm-hmm. I like to be able to fact check myself. And I'm always a little paranoid that I'm like, oh, what if I got this fact wrong? And I'm like, if I got it wrong, somebody's going to tell me and then I'm going to fix it. Mm-hmm. And then I learned something. So I'd rather be correct mm-hmm. the first time. But, you know, if I read something and it's wrong, I will go back and correct it. I'm happy to do that. And I also love that when I lecture, the information is all out there, but it's under different names. It's not even necessarily under Georgia Wonder or something like John Fisher's Body Magic. There's stuff in there that
oh,
I've
sure.
used. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's... But a lot of these things I don't know because, again, I didn't have a mentor until I was 25. So lecturing at magic conventions is like research for me. Even today, like I have stuff written on my arm, like where people were giving me, oh, have you seen this? I'm like, no, like I didn't have a piece of paper. So I'm just writing it on my arm. Like, here we go.
Okay.
But it's great because I get to find new stuff. And yes, it is 150 years old, but there's so much there.
Mm-hmm.
And I can only go so far with it. I'm 5'5". I'm not necessarily a petite person, but compared to my family, who is very tall, I'm smaller than them. So it works well on them. But like in France, I'm American.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not small. So if this is as far as I can go with it, is performing it as a historical act and then doing the amount of research so that somebody else who was built better for it can bring it back to where it was, I'm happy to do that.
So you are fine with someone else doing this act then also?
Yeah.
You're okay.
Yeah, that's why I wrote the notes. I want people to do it. And there's so much you can do with it, like in the lecture. So I met Alex Hilsey at Mark D'Souza's Maze Convention, and I lectured there, and she bought the lecture notes.
I love Alex.
Isn't she wonderful?
She is. I was so sorry for her when I saw her, as an aside, in Blackpool, that she was saying that someone had recommended bringing like 500 lecture notes with her, and I mm-hmm. think in the first lecture, she only sold like 40 or 50 notes. I didn't talk to her after the second lecture. I hope that she sold out on the rest of them.
I hope so, because
yeah.
she is
She's amazing.
Phenomenal.
She is.
I love her.
Yeah.
And so she taught the Georgia Wonder Act to her six-year-old. This is last year or the year before. She taught it to her six-year-old
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
sent me the video. And I was like, oh, like, it makes me so happy.
The video you
do.
Showed today,
mm-hmm.
was that Alex? That wasn't
yeah.
Alex.
No, that was Alex. That was her and her little
I
girl.
Wish you would have said that because I would have looked at it because I was thinking, it just looked like some random woman. I didn't
no.
think that was.
No, it was Alex.
Okay.
Yep.
Interesting. Yeah.
And she had her hair down, so.
Maybe that
yeah.
was it. So basically, what we're talking about, people are wondering, okay, this is a little bit too much inside baseball
oh, yeah,
here. It was a video that you had shown about Alex, who was teaching her six-year-old
yep.
how to do this thing that you can't pick up the child.
Yep.
Explain that, I'm sorry.
Yeah, so her six-year-old Treva, who is so stinking cute, oh my goodness.
Mm-hmm.
So the stunt here is that you go to lift a a man goes to lift a woman by their hips, like you grab their hip bones and lift them straight up in the air, or you can do it with a kid or whatever. Mm-hmm. Alex goes to lift Treva and she can't do it. Yeah. Like you cannot pick them up off the ground.
Yeah.
It's just, it's phenomenal. And how stinking cute was she? She's like, pick me up, pick me up. You cannot pick me up. Those were her magic words. So mm-hmm. they are now trademarked. Nobody take them.
Well, as you had explained also, obviously, these are all just physics. I mean, all I physics. Had learned some things like that in which you, for an example, if you stand up against the wall with your back, you mm-hmm. can't reach over and touch your feet. And there are certain things you physically can't do because of physics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And there's a lot of other stuff. I didn't get into this in the lecture, but like chair stunts where you have like people sitting in chairs. I haven't gotten into that. I am very worried about lawsuits. Hmm. I'm really worried about lawsuits. So I'm very careful about stuff because you can choose the best person, but if they, you know, they get a bee in their bonnet.
True.
I don't want to be on the other end of that.
And I think you could be fairly easy. I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
Now, your act then as it stands right now is probably only 12 minutes tops or?
Yeah, it is. It's around 10 to 12, depending.
Okay.
But I do it as a piece in a bigger show.
Of course.
So my
part
full
of a variety
show,
thing.
Right. So my full show is The Forgotten Library. And what I do with that, I do the Georgia Wonder in it. The original idea for this was just, I love weird history. Mm-hmm. I love weird stories. I'm a mm-hmm. bizarre magician. I love ghost stories. And I wanted a show where I could tell these weird historical stories. So like the Georgia Wonder, a lot of people haven't heard that. The hat pins that I do, I talk about the hat pin panic from the 1900s.
And, hat pin panic?
Yeah.
What?
Oh, this is a great story. So 1900s, women were, society was changing. So women could go out without a chaperone. All mm-hmm. by themselves. Amazing.
In 1900.
Yeah.
Just so, the turn of the century. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. Hmm. So this is like my sweet spot is like turn of the century.
Yeah, apparently.
Right? I was born in the wrong era. But so they could go out by themselves. But this also meant that like typically men were taking advantage of that since they didn't have their, essentially their bouncer. There's actually a painting. I forget who painted it around that time. And it was called like the unwanted visitor. And it was a young girl sitting on a train with a guy like kind of leering over here. It's become a meme, not exactly a meme, but it's become very popular online, like dissecting it. Anyway, so the hat pin panic, women were defending themselves mm-hmm. with their hat pins, which were these long pins that would hold their hat in their hair. Mm-hmm. Because by law, they couldn't carry any kind of weapons.
Weapons, right.
None. So the media didn't like this, and they decided they were, this started in the U.S., but became a worldwide thing. There were reports in France, the U.K., Australia of this happening, where women were using their hatpins as swords. Mm-hmm. And the media was like, oh, well, essentially, we don't like this. Women shouldn't be defending themselves against these men.
Attackers?
Yeah, against these attackers.
Oh, my gosh.
So they came up with a name that they thought were going to embarrass them. It didn't work because the name was a petticoated swashbuckler. Right?
Yeah,
if you look at petticoated swashbuckler online, there are these wonderful fan art pictures of these women, turn of the century, you know.
Like in pirate costumes or whatever.
No, just the regular turn of the century like clothing, but their hat pins are sword sized. So it's them. It's beautiful. And my favorite true crime podcast, My Favorite Murder, they covered a serial killer in, I think it was the UK, and he was stopped by a woman using her hat pin against him.
Interesting story.
Mm-hmm. Huh. So I use the hat pin panic as my patter for.
So the hat pin panic was a real thing.
A real
thing. The media had termed, given him that term apparently, because mm-hmm. they were panicked about how that these attackers were fended off with ladies using their hat pins as swords or.
Exactly. And women were printing out the 1900s equivalent of a zine and handing it out like, this is how you defend yourself with a hat pin.
Uh-huh.
And so now I have a collection of actual hat pins in France. I just keep them in my nice little curio cabinet. I have all these beautiful little hat pins.
Yeah, because the women wore these all over the world. It was very fashionable.
Yeah, it was basically a bobby pin.
Yeah, well, it's longer.
Yeah, longer. Yeah. A long bobby pin.
Well, no, a bobby pin has like two pieces, kind of like, mm-hmm. you know, they would clip, whereas yeah. a hat pin is just a pin.
Yeah, just
pin
one. With, yeah. But, you know, it keeps it in place. It's as common as a bobby pin.
Yeah, oh, I see what
yeah.
you're saying. Sure.
Yeah. A decorative bobby pin, if mm-hmm. you will. But yeah, so I use that. I also do Michael Amar's Iceman Cometh, and I tie that with a story with the, you know, the Handmaid's Tale.
Wow.
Yeah. And the Descendants.
You really go dark sometimes.
Hey, I go real dark. but there was a poem written called Half-Hanged Mary. Mm-hmm. Why can't I think of her name? The author of Handmaid's Tale. My mind just blanked. Margaret Atwood. There we go.
Correct. Yeah.
So she is a descendant of a woman that was convicted of being a witch pre-Salem, but around the same area. And what happened was her neighbors decided to end her. And so they
made these lies.
Mm-hmm. But they took matters into their own hands.
Oh.
Yeah. And then they went, hung her up a tree, buried her in the snow. And then she walked into town the next day.
That's pretty freaky.
Isn't that great? So Margaret Atwood wrote a poem called Half-Hanged Mary, and there's a line in there.
Half-Hanged Mary.
Half-Hanged Mary. She wasn't fully hanged, and
yeah,
you can't be tried twice.
Right, right.
And there's a line in there that says, I wasn't a witch when they buried me, but now I am one.
Hmm.
Oh, how great is that? So instead of using a card, I use a picture of Mary, or, you know, a drawn picture, because they didn't really have cameras then.
Yeah.
And so that appears in a Handmaid's Tale book. And I tie it all together because Margaret Atwell is descendant.
Yeah. Right, right.
So it's just these different stories. And I also have a deep love for Van Gogh or Van Gogh. And working on a story with him.
Have you been to, obviously being in France, have you gone over and seen some of the areas where, that have inspired him and where he
painted? I'm going to Auvers-sur-Oise in where he spent his final days and where he's buried in a couple weeks.
Okay.
And I've been to the Musée d'Orsay. They had a big exhibit for him. And it was very touching because they had his letters between him and his brother Theo printed on the walls. You could buy the book. And of course, I bought it. But I'm standing there and they had extended this because it was sold out for weeks and weeks. And so they extended it by another couple months and then it was still sold out. And so I'm standing there and there's just people wall to wall. And on the wall is a snippet from one of his letters and they translated it to English. And it said, one day I hope to have a like an exhibit in Paris, maybe in a small cafe.
Hmm.
And it's just all these people that wanted to see him. And I'm like, how wonderful is that?
Boy, really? Right.
Yeah.
Well, in the seance stuff that you did mm-hmm. you actually, when you do a seance, do you act as if that you are a seeker of truth, or do you act as a medium, or do you have someone who is an Indian guide or something that will lead you, or do you use a Ouija board, or what is your...
No.
How do you...
Yeah. So I'm like a lot of people that I know that do seances, but I'm different than what most people think a seance is. I bill mine as a theatrical seance. Mm-hmm. I let people know up front, this is going to look like it's real, it's not. I do believe in ghosts and evil spirits and that kind of thing. I lived in a haunted house for a while and it was terrifying. And so here I do it as entertainment and I make sure they know it's entertainment, but it's going to be scary. So I liken it to watching a scary movie.
Okay.
You know, nothing's going to come out of the TV at you.
Right.
But there's that little part of your brain that wonders if it is.
Yeah, but I can guarantee you something's going to happen.
Yeah, stuff's going to happen for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fun. And people are so intrigued by this kind of thing. I mean, it's the biggest
mystery. Of course they
are. What happens afterward? We all want to know. There's so many different ideas and things. And I do mine specifically an Amelia Earhart seance, because why has nobody done an Amelia Earhart seance?
Mm-hmm.
Come on.
We do Jack the Ripper. My partner, Jamie Salinas, and I do Jack the Ripper kind of a thing.
Right.
And it's a believable thing, too, because, boy, I've discussed this before, but I'll try and be brief here.
No, you're good.
One of the suspects that still is believed that could have been Jack the Ripper, mm-hmm. actually wasn't found because he checked himself into a mental hospital. So the police were looking in homes and different places, but they didn't check the mental hospital. And he, shortly thereafter, had taken a ship across to the U.S., mm-hmm. and there were similar Ripper-esque type of slayings
that
happened
those.
In New York and Atlanta and in Galveston, Texas.
Yeah.
And there are newspaper clippings that talk about these things in which prostitutes had been ripped apart. And with similar, when you compare it now, of course, they didn't have this network that you knew what was happening. They didn't read each other's newspapers or mm-hmm. know what was happening.
Yeah.
But this particular place where we held our seances regularly in Houston was a place that was in the Market Square area mm-hmm. where there were prostitutes who apply their trade then also.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's an easy stretch to say he could have come here and after these other places mm-hmm. looking for someone, but it was too busy and he went a little bit further on down to Galveston. Mm. But let's see if we can bring him back. And so it's not much of a stretch to make people believe that this kind of a thing can happen. So
you're just connecting two dots, essentially.
I like the thing with the, Sarah Bernhardt, Amelia Earhart, mm-hmm. where are you? Yeah.
Yeah. So, where are you at?
Yeah.
It's interesting you bring up Jack the Ripper because I have an interesting relationship with that. And I'm in the bizarre magic community. Obviously, that's kind of where I cut my teeth. And I've seen it done, and I'm not saying this about you, I'm sure it's wonderfully done, but I've seen it done badly where people do Jack the Ripper.
Mm.
And I would like to do, I've been working on a piece, there was a book called The Five, where it just focused on the women
mm-hmm.
and not on Jack the Ripper. It was like the only thing they had in common was Jack the Ripper killed them.
Mm-hmm.
But I love the idea. And I'm pretty sure there's not a lot of evidence to back this up, but it's, you know, the romanticized idea that Jack the Ripper stopped because the women made him stop and ended him. Like the women kind of banded together. Not the ones he killed, obviously, but like the women of the community.
Who were friends of these ladies mm-hmm. who had sought him out and killed him.
Exactly.
That's an interesting theory. I've never heard that one.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah. I'm just...
Have you ever gone on the Ripper tour in England?
No, I almost
it's
did.
Fun.
I almost did the
it's
last time
scary.
I was there. I love scary stuff, but
me
it
too.
Was why didn't I go? There was a reason I didn't go because I really wanted to go.
Do you like horror films?
I do.
Girl.
I don't like gory stuff. Not gory stuff.
I don't know why we haven't been friends longer.
Right? Come on. And like I said, it's so funny because I married like the little sunshine, like romantic. It was like a black cat married a golden retriever.
Yeah. That's funny. So what is your favorite, one of your favorite horror films? I mean, how deep and dark do you go?
Ooh. That's a hard one.
Yeah.
I like suspense movies. I really like suspense movies.
Big on slasher? I mean, like,
no,
not
I
like
did,
Hostel or anything
I
like that.
I accidentally watched a slasher film because it was my favorite true crime story, mm-hmm. Cocaine Bear.
Oh, yeah. Right, right.
I love Cocaine Bear.
That was a good movie. Surprisingly.
It stayed true to the actual story for about 2 minutes.
Is that supposed to be a real story?
It was a real story.
I did not know that.
I'm sending you the podcast.
Okay.
I'm going to send you the podcast to listen to about it. It was amazing. But no, Cocaine Bear was an actual story.
Okay.
And that was the first movie that I saw in France. Boris got us tickets to an early release that was all in English.
Yeah.
Neither one of us knew it was a slasher film. And I have a very weak stomach. And like, we finished and I was like, okay, I'm going to try not to pass out because there was so much blood.
Yeah.
But I love suspense movies. So I actually have a very big movie gap knowledge. There are a ton of movies I haven't seen. Boris is appalled. And so we have I haven't seen Titanic.
Okay, I understand why we're not friends. Haven't been friends.
So there's like a list of movies.
I get closer and then I push me away.
Right.
I get close like, and push me away.
Closer and push away. A couple weeks ago, we watched Dead Zone, which I didn't know anything about. It took me a minute to realize Christopher Walken was Christopher Walken.
Mm.
I loved that.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple years ago, I watched a movie. It was called like A Hole in the Ground or Hole in the Ground.
It didn't ring a bell. It's not the one with Ryan Reynolds, is it?
No. Mm-mm. This one, it was, I think it was set in Scotland, and it was creepy, but really interesting. I'm not going to tell you, but if you go watch it, it starts off like, it doesn't go the way you think it's going to go,
mm-hmm.
but I knew I picked up on some things. I was watching it with my mom. And I looked at her, I'm like, this is what it's going to be. And she goes, no, it's not. That makes no sense. We get to the end of the movie. She goes, how did you know that? But that one, it was very suspenseful, very just, it was so good. And we saw another one called, I think it was called Missing. And that one was really well done. Uh-huh. It was a girl and her mom, and her single mom, and the girl's like in college. The mom goes on a trip with her boyfriend and she goes missing. But the whole movie isn't shot, like, obviously shot with a camera, but it's done from different screens. So, like, you see her FaceTiming her mom and then WhatsApping people.
I love that.
It was amazing. Mm-hmm. So we get to the end of it and mom looks at me. She goes, if I go missing, you're the one that is finding me. It's like, I know. I'm going to find you. But those might be my favorite. I think Missing might be right now just because it was so well done and different.
It kind of reminds me a little bit. There was a movie, and I wish I remember what it was, but it was kind of like called Uber or Lyft or something. It was about a guy who was picking up people and he was killing them. I think he had bottles of water or something, but he was also FaceTiming. And so he had people who were, so the whole movie was basically through a FaceTime app.
Wow.
And the murders that he committed in his car. You know, these people.
Oh, that's crazy.
I wish I can't remember the name of that movie then either necessarily. So you're not a big Rob Zombie fan or anything necessarily. So because he's really a gory.
No, I can't do it. I pass out when they take my blood. I can't do it. Like, not even when they do like the full IV thing. Like, I'm talking about when they prick your finger, I'm out.
So as far as when you're interested in bizarre kinds of things, where do you find your market? Where can you do those kinds of shows? I mean, they don't book you to do that necessarily.
They
maybe
don't.
Around Halloween or something. I mean, seances are a completely different thing in which you can market that. However, you know, it would be hard, I think, to go to someone's home and say, okay, I'm going to freak you guys out.
Let me do creepy stuff.
Yeah,
for
that's
you.
Right.
No, so right now, most of the stuff I do is in Paris. I got in with a couple different comedy troupes.
Oh, interesting.
And they like me for whatever reason. My friend Rada, he was doing a magic night. And so he asked me, hey, do you want to do this? So I was like, yeah, sure. And then I met some people through there and he's been recommending me. And, you know, I go in, I perform. They like my weird stuff that I do and they ask me to come back. So I'm doing like mainly like 10-minute, 20-minute sets. Just kind of through there and conventions and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to shop my full act around to some theaters next year, but if I could use more time off this year, I'd do it. But even though I get a ton of time off in France, again, best friend, who is basically a sister, and my sister getting married within a month of each other, all of it's going towards that.
Yeah. A lot of stuff going on.
Oh, my God.
So where are you going to be going from here? What's happening next before we start to wrap up over here?
No, you're good. So after this, I fly back to France on Monday, and I'm there. I'm booked every weekend this month. Happy birthday to me. I get to work every weekend. It's great. And I love doing magic over there. It's because bizarre magic hasn't really taken off over there yet, so it's really different over there. And then I'll be back in the States for 4F.
Okay.
And then I'll be performing at City Winery. I got the confirmation. Yeah.
Where's the City Winery?
That's in New York.
Okay.
In the city. David Cassaro runs it. Huh. So Boris and I are performing there. Mm-hmm. We did it last year. He was on stage. I did walk around. And then this year it's flipped. So Boris is my opening act.
That's nice. That's nice.
And he's okay with it. We'll be back for that. And I'll be at 4F. And you'll see the hat pins at 4F.
I will see you there.
It's
going to be fun. So as we close, the name of my podcast, as you know, is called The Magic Word. I always like to know what it is that is important to you. What is your...
My magic word?
Mm-hmm.
Wonder.
Wonder. Of course. It wouldn't be magnet. It'd be wonder.
Wonder. Mm-hmm. No, because I think, you know, it holds a lot of meaning in a couple different ways. And also, I love a good pun.
As do I. And I love you. Thank you very much. I appreciate you being my guest here today. This has been fantastic. It went really, really quick. I can't believe that an hour is up as I'm kind of glancing quickly at my watch over here. Thank you very much. And that this has been a great opportunity for the listeners to get to know you a little bit better then too. And hopefully they'll be able to see you perform from some places. So they happen to be in France. They can check you out over there then too. And your website is?
MagicTiffany.com.
Okay.
And that has, but as soon as you go on there, you can go to the Princess Tiff side or the new Georgia Wonder side.
You can link to the Georgia Wonder. Very good.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. So for the Magic Word podcast, that was Tiffany Savage. This is Scotty out.
Thank you again, Tiffany, for being my guest this week on the Magic Word Podcast. And I also want to thank all of you who have been going out this past week or so and voting for the Magic Word Podcast as the best magic podcast in the world for FISM that we had received this nomination, and also for your votes for the best newsletter, or like as I call it, a pod letter, that has also received a nomination. For those of you who are finding us out for the first time, if you'll go to themagicwordpodcast.com, there on the website, you will see a link that will show you a little graphic. You can click on that. It'll take you to the FISM website where you'll have an opportunity to vote. Between now and July, I'm not going to continue every week to hound on this. So although I would love to do this and ensure that everybody has an opportunity to vote and help us out, but I'll just kind of come back from time to time. But I hate to kind of blow my own horn or beat my own chest about this, but I am very thankful and excited about this potential of an award, but it hasn't been given yet. It's hanging out there, still needing all of you to get out and do the voting and to make sure that this does happen. And also, I want to thank those of you who have subscribed to the pod letter. As I said, that's another thing that has actually been nominated for another online award here this year. And perhaps as far as what I do on the podcast, it's really not known how much work actually all this takes. But whenever I listen to some other podcasts that have nothing to do with magic, and at the end they talk about different people who, in their credits, who are been responsible for that particular episode or the podcast, I just kind of find it funny because they have such a large staff. So I just thought that perhaps you might like to know who helps on this podcast then as well. The Magic Word Podcast is a show that's made by Scott Wells. The engineer is Scott Wells. It's produced and directed by Scott Wells. It's edited by Scott Wells. It's digitally enhanced by Scott Wells. The music and intro is by Fiverr. The website that is used for the Magic Word is Squarespace. The website design is by Scott Wells. The talent wrangler is Scott Wells. The newsletter or the pod letter is designed by Scott Wells. The pod letter is edited by Scott Wells. Graphics are by Scott Wells. Also, the video editing is done by Scott Wells using Wondershare. The pod letter is also hosted by MailChimp, and the Magic Word Podcast is catered by Dunkin' Donuts. So, anyhow, this is a loving venture, and I appreciate, again, the Friends of the Magic Word who recognize all the hard work that goes into this that I do by putting your financial support behind it, and I appreciate it. And also all those thousands who have supported me by subscribing to the pod letter and coming back week to week and hearing these episodes. We got some more good stuff coming up over the next few weeks and into the rest of this year and beyond, thanks to those friends. So, until next week, stay well, get booked, and remember to share the wonder. This is Scotty out.